everything is supposed to do to work? Because I don't. I'm doing everything I do normally and nothing has been detected. Hello. It's doing absolutely nothing. Yeah, it's all connected.
You want me to phone Maltz at all? I can give them a phone.
Well, yeah, but okay. As the lecture is, yeah.
That's how normal comes on anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's not detecting anything.
I'll give them a phone. You can start
if you,
talking.
Yeah, thank, well, thank you, yes. But that's my... hello. Okay. Sorry, I'll touch this first. That seems to have gone faulty, which is great news. We're hoping that Maltz will come and fix it quickly. However, as my very first point is on the slides, it's a little bit of a pain. What should be happening is there are lecture notes being passed around for this lecture, so please make sure you pick up a copy. From next week, however, the ITO will place the lecture notes outside the room on the fifth floor of Appleton Tower, which I think is familiar to you, yes. And they will be there at least one day before each lecture, well, the relevant lecture anyway. So you can pick them up at some time before the lecture. Okay. If you've missed the notes coming around this time, there's some spares there. If there's any spares as they go around, please bring them up at the end when the lecture finishes, which may be sooner rather than later if this continues. I should also add one simple statement. The lecture notes are supplied to you free of charge, which is fine. Please do not abuse this facility. That's to say, don't just pick up a lecture note, lose it, and pick up another and another and wonder why they've run out. This costs real money, and I mean a lot of real money. Okay, so it's a facility that we'd like to keep on, but obviously only if we can keep the cost under control. The notes are also on the website, as you'll have seen. They're all on there now. They're there for convenience if you're away or something, you need to look them up and you haven't got your copy with you. Do not, under any circumstances, print notes off the web through informatics printing devices, because that costs even more money and is therefore even more wasteful of resource. If you want to print them on your own printer with your own paper, well, be my guest. Okay. But please don't abuse the facility, because then you know we risk having serious problems with the budgets, which is already quite a lot over what it should be. Okay, I think I'll start with the whiteboard, and then if they fix that thing, we'll carry on with that. What this lecture is going to be concerned about is introducing the relevant tools we need in order to do analysis of algorithms in a reasonably pain-free but correct way. In the first lecture yesterday, I did some very quick rough and ready analysis and said that's what it ought to be. But obviously that approach isn't terribly satisfactory. It was okay there because we're looking at fairly simple situations and we could see how things were going. But as things progress, we need to have a more methodical approach and a better sort of set of symbols for how to do such analysis. And the most important tool that we have for this kind of task is asymptotic notation. And I hope that most of this lecture will be effectively a revision for you, that you'll have seen most of this stuff in your mathematics courses, but it's so important I want to make sure that everybody is synchronized on it. So let me introduce, first of all, something we'll be using a great deal of, which is the concept of... big O notation. So if we have two functions, is it this that's making them? It's not going well, is it? If it carries on, I'll just take it off. To hell with that. If you can't hear me, tell me at the back and I'll shout, okay? I'm sorry, but you know, I'm not going to have that because it's just obviously not good. My third year of lecturing needs to be, and this is the worst, you know, I've never had such an incident, but you know, that's gone wrong. What else is going to go wrong? Maybe I'll just drop dead. But which might be a merciful release for all of us, but it could be a bit messy, so let's not do that. Okay, big O. So in this work, we're always dealing with functions that take natural numbers as arguments. Why? Because we're going to be measuring the running time of algorithms, and we're parameterizing those by input size, and of course input size is always some natural number. Okay? Yeah? So we're always looking at functions f, and we'll be looking at two functions to make this, you know, have said, that take a natural number and return for us a runtime, which normally could be a natural number if you're measuring runtime in terms of computation steps, but just to be more general, let's let it be just some real number. So the result of f of these functions is, think of that as being input size, and the output is just runtime. But for now, we're just looking at abstract functions. The reason I mentioned this runtime is only to motivate why we're looking at those particular kinds of functions, not just some general functions on the real numbers. Now, to say that f is big O of g, well, I'm running ahead of myself with the notation a bit, but we'll be using that notation for our work. And that's supposed to capture the notion that the rate of growth of f is bounded by the rate of growth of g. It's an upper bound, so if f grows no worse than g does, it might be much better than g, but it's certainly no worse than g. It doesn't compare actual values as such. The values of f might be bigger than those of g, but the growth rate is the same, or no worse. That's what it's supposed to come. So it's abstracting away constants which we can't actually hope to have in any abstract analysis anyway, and concentrating what we can hope to have in this abstract analysis, which is the rate of growth of the function. We saw in the last lecture, linear search. We've got it. Brilliant.
Okay. Your resolution was set behind your laptop.
No, sorry, I've never had that happen before. I mean, that's always been set that. This microphone is now causing noise. It's making weird noises. It's making those.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
You see what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah, can you just put away and I'll carry on shouting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Resolution set too high. I shan't argue. Apparently the resolution was set too high. It's the resolution I've always had it set to. And it's never had a problem. So anyway, okay, I hope you can hear me now, yeah? Okay. Right, let's start again. I'll have to make up some lost time, but I think we'll be okay. So this is what I was about to say. The big O notation, let me just do it from here just to get going. So, formally, we have two functions f and g from n to r, and I've already said why we're looking at those kinds of functions and not something else. Okay, we say that f is big O of g. If there's a natural number n zero, this could be just, you know, some number. We don't care what it is, as long as there is some number that does the following job for us. And what's the following job? We can also find some other constant c, which can be a real number this time. Okay, so that if you look at now the values of the functions from n0 onwards, we don't care what happens before n0, but from n0 onwards, we must have f of n is less than or equal to c times g of n. All these definitions are in the notes that are going around, by the way, so you don't need to write it down unless you particularly want to, okay? That's the definition of what it means for f to be big O of g. Is this reasonably familiar to most of you as a definition? Okay. Don't worry, I shan't hold you to it, you know. I'll remind you of everything. Okay, what does this really mean? In other words, big O of G is really a set of functions. It's all those functions for which this property holds. Okay, that's what really big O of G means. And to say that F is big O of G means that F belongs to this set of functions. Okay, that's just, you know, rephrasing what we've just said already. Okay, I'm going to move away from this terminology of set membership for reasons we'll see shortly. Informally, we say for sufficiently large n instead of for all n from n0 onwards. It's the same meaning, really. It's just saying, you know, once you go far enough, this property holds and holds forever. Okay.
Initially, there may be some weird stuff going on. We don't care about that. From now on, it's all fine. And in terms of algorithms, that just corresponds to, if you have an algorithm, there may be, for small inputs, the setup of data structures, initialization of variables, and so on, dominates the runtime. And the dependence on the input size is swamped by these other initialization features. But once you get to large enough inputs, those initializations are essentially now noise, and what you see is the true picture of dependence on the runtime of the runtime on the input size. That's what is going on here in terms of algorithms. Okay. All right, so let's just examine the features of this notation and understand them carefully. C allows us to adjust for constants, because remember, we're looking at growth rate rather than actual values. How fast does this thing grow? So if you double the input size, what happens to the runtime? Does it get doubled, quadrupled, or what? Okay. That's obviously useful information to have. Okay. So consider n squared and 3n squared, 20n squared, 100n squared. Now, of course, they have different values, but their growth rate is obviously the same. And just to illustrate the point, consider n being replaced by an. What happens to the values of each of these functions? Well, each of them gets blown up by a squared. So they have the same growth rates. I hope you can see how that's useful information. If we don't know the constants of these functions, the 1, the 3, the 20, the 100 there, but we just know how they grow, we still have useful information. It says no matter what the actual runtime is, if you were to double your input size, the runtime would quadruple. Okay. All right. N0, as I've said, it allows for a settling in period of atypical behavior, which may be atypical for various reasons. Doesn't matter why. And big O, the value of this notation is it allows us to concentrate on the big picture, what's happening to the growth rate, and allows us to not worry about constants, which we can't know anyway. I discussed that a little bit yesterday. Okay. Unless you know the exact machine you're running the thing on, the exact compiler, et cetera, et cetera, there's no way you can know the constants in the first place. Right. And even if you do know them today, tomorrow they're going to change. Okay, so let's not worry about them. They are important, but they have to be determined at the time of usage. Okay. But the growth rate is not dependent on the compiler, the machine, and so on. It depends on the underlying algorithm. That's the point. And that's what we can hope to capture precisely. Okay. We will write F equals big O of G instead of F is in big O of G. Strictly speaking, of course, this is nonsense. F is a function, big O of G is a set of functions. What on earth could that mean? Okay. Well, it doesn't mean literally F is equal to that set. Okay. It means this exactly. Just say if you write F equals big O of G, what you're saying is there is some function in big O of G such that F is equal to that function. Okay. Another equality holding for functions. Okay. Now, the reason why this abusive notation is useful is because then we can do long chains of reasoning about growth rates in an equational fashion. Because it makes sense, we'll see it later, so I won't go into it now. We'll see an example of this later, okay? So for now, just get used to the meaning of this is precisely that. I'll say, it makes it convenient to have chains of reasoning. Sorry, I'm going a bit fast because I need to catch up on this last time. I do apologize for that, but I'll slow down when I get to actual examples, okay? This is all standard definitional stuff, which is in the notes, but I want to have enough time for some examples. Okay. A caveat, note the notation is from left to right. This is a directional notation when you use the big O. Okay, F equals big O of G does not mean big O of G equals F. That's just nonsense. Okay, there's no meaning attached to that. Okay. Note another thing. If we say F is F1 plus big O of G, and...
Thank you. Thanks very much. I can stop shouting now.
If we say F is big... It's no joke trying to get this under all this... I'm a fool to myself, really, but there we go. I shaved for 6 weeks when I was a youngster. And I observed that after every time I shaved, the next morning, I had to shave again. I thought, this is a mug's game, so I chucked the razor away. and it's worked, it's worked. Okay. I commend it. Okay. Right, so let's go back to this. Sorry. If we say F is equals big F1 plus big O of G, what that is saying is there is some function, let's say G1, in big O of G, such that the equation F equals
what am I saying, F1 plus G1 hold in functional terms. Is that clear enough? And then to say, oh, but that's also equal to F2 plus big O of G, what you're saying is there's some function, let's call it G2 in big O of G, such that this further equation holds. Okay? Yeah? Now you can see from here that such an assertion doesn't imply that F1 equals F2. Okay. By no means. Yes? I hope that's fairly clear. Okay. So one needs to be a little bit careful in handling the big O notation, but once you get used to these things, and it doesn't take very long, it's really beautifully easy and allows long chains of reasoning, which would otherwise be incredibly painful and boring and tedious. And we just want to avoid that. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd rather not have boredom and tedium in my life. I want to, you know, do more interesting stuff. So once we master the notation, the tool, it actually helps us a hell of a lot. But you do have to master it by getting used to it. Okay. There is this modern mania that, oh, everybody can do anything just by pressing the right buttons, you know. That's okay for consumer products. You can make them do that, but if you're dealing with actually non-trivial knowledge, you can't do that. You have to actually study the knowledge and practice it and then get used to it. And this is really not that difficult to get used to, but you do need to get used to it. So the final line is important here. Okay, it does seem strange at first, but it's easy to get used to. Once you get used to it, it is incredibly useful, and that's why it's worth doing. Okay, so in other words, the big O notation is your friend, not your enemy. Okay, it's not yet one more chore. Okay, it is actually one wonderful tool to use. Okay, let's just see some examples of proving that something is big O of something, which I hope you've seen already in various versions in previous studies. But let's just do a few just to be, you know, familiarize ourselves. So, if I claim 3n cubed is big O of n cubed, does that in any way surprise you? I should hope not. The growth rate of 3n cubed is like that of n cubed. Well, let's prove it formally. Actually, we're saying it's no worse than that of n cubed, but actually it's obviously the same. But we're not making that claim just now. Well, let's prove this formally. What do we need? We need a c and an n zero such that 3n cubed is less than or equal to cn cubed. Well, it doesn't take any significant time to say, well, why don't you just take c equals 3 and n zero to be zero? It's always true, yes? So this is really trivial, okay? Of course, we don't always have such trivialities, but the important point is to see that, you know, you make an obvious assertion, the proof is itself equally obvious. Okay, there's nothing big going on here. Any difficulty one has is just because one hasn't bothered to read the definition and understand the notation. Okay, there's nothing here. Okay. Slightly more interesting, 3n cubed plus 8 is big O of n cubed. Okay. So here we're adding 8 onto the 3n cubed, but we're saying that the addition of 8 onto that doesn't alter the growth rate. Now, intuitively, that should be obvious. Right? It alters the actual values, but the rate of growth of this function is not going to be affected by adding a little 8 on at the end of it, you know? Yeah? You know, if you're really stinking rich and your wealth is growing by doubling every year, or when somebody says, oh, you're getting $10 added to your account every year, by the way, Mr. Whatever, it doesn't really affect you, you know, how rich you're getting. I mean, it's noise. Okay. It's the equivalent here. Well, let's prove this now by a kind of investigatory approach. Rather than magically pulling out C and then zero and saying, look, they work by verifying it, let's see how we could hunt down C and then zero, because that's more realistic in terms of what one has to do in many situations. Well, let's observe. What we need is to find a constant C bigger than zero so that this inequality here works, and we have to find some n0 so that it holds from that n0 onwards. Okay. Well, the thing we'd like to hold here holds if and only if, well, when we divide by n cubed on both sides, we have this, providing, of course, n is now bigger than 0. You can't have n equals 0 or your division was nonsense. Right? So this on the side is putting a constraint. It's saying n0 had better be at least 1. But otherwise, there's no further constraint. Is that, yeah, obvious? But now let's observe that this side has become very nice now. Why? Because as n increases, what happens to 8 over n cubed? It decreases, right? And as we're trying to put an upper bound on it, then to get an upper bound, all we need to do is examine the expression for the smallest value of n that we allow. In this case, n equals 1, okay? So we have that 3 plus 8 over n cubed is never bigger than 11. Okay, that's when n equals 1. Yeah? Okay, well, we're finished basically. If we take c equals 11, n0 equals 1, our chain of reasoning can now be reversed. From here, we get to here. From here, we get to here. Okay. And note, it's very important to understand that what matters here in this chain of reasoning is not from here to here to here, the implications that way. It's the implications going backwards, which you have to ensure hold. It's a very common mistake. Okay. We're trying to deduce that this thing holds, and we're saying, if you take these values, then this holds. Oh, and by what we just said, well, this holds, and by what we just said, this holds. The fact that the other way around is also true is nice, but not the important point. Okay, really key thing to understand. Okay, it's like, you know, I said, if it's raining, the road outside is going to be wet. Okay, true. You cannot observe that the road is wet and deduce that therefore it is raining, because there's a burst mains pipe up the road and that's making the road go wet. Yes? Get your implications the right way around. Really important. It's a very common mistake that people make. The other thing I should add here is I'll just wait until the social chat is finished and then we'll proceed. Are you ready to listen to the lecture now? Okay. Thank you very much. Right. Very important. The reason many people have such difficulty with mathematics is because they refuse to accept that mathematical arguments should be written down in a fluent manner so they can be read with pleasure and not some random set of symbols which somehow are supposed to magically produce correctness. Yeah? When you read a piece of mathematics, it should be punctuated so that it can be read without doubt. Add some linking words to explain what's going on, okay? And make sure that your reasoning is going the right way around. Okay? Now, there's quite a bit of advice in the notes about the one you've just had round, okay? But I sum it up in the three holy C's, which is clear, concise, and correct. Right? So when you write down a mathematical argument, make sure it meets those criteria. And the way you make sure it does that is by giving yourself enough time to do maybe a first draft, your jottings and so on, which are kind of saying, well, what's happening here? Okay. But after you've done that first draft, don't just say, that's it, I've finished. Now write it out fully. Okay. Look at the notes as a model. Okay. They're not just some random collection of symbols. They're actually fluent bits of text. Okay. That's what you should be aiming at. Okay. If you don't aim at that, you're simply accepting that you will never become fluent in mathematics. Or you're accepting that you make life incredibly hard for yourself. Okay? It really is important. People confuse the fact that somebody may be writing on the board and living out words. That's just because there's no time to write everything out. Okay? But when you produce your final version, you write it out properly and fully. Really key thing to actually absorb and understand. Okay? So please read the relevant passage in the notes carefully and take it fully on board. You'll find you have a much better time with mathematical reasoning if you accept that and follow it as your final version of your arguments. Okay. And if you've made a mistake, that will reveal it to you much better than anything else. Okay. So anyway, I hope that this example here has shown you how one might go proving such a thing in an investigatory fashion, rather than just, you know, my writing down C equals 11 and N0 equals 1 and now let's prove this work. It's true, but how did I find them? We've actually deduced them. Okay, I think we have time for a demo. Before that, let me complete this slide. Note that we could also take C equals 4 and 0 equals 2, and then if we insist that n is at least 2, then this side becomes 3 plus 8 over 8. It becomes 4. Okay, so from n equals 2, we can take C equals 4 rather than 11, or we could take from n equals 3, and then c can become smaller and smaller. Okay, yeah. In terms of a demo, might as well do this since I've got it up. Okay, is that yeah? Okay. If you look at this line here, what I'm going to do is a plot of 3n cubed plus 8 versus cn cubed, where c ranges from 3 to 11. Now, when C equals 3, what do you expect to happen? What will 3 and Q be in relation to 3 and Q plus 8? Will it ever overtake it? Clearly not. It's always going to be 8 below it. But the minute C gets above 3, then C and Q will overtake C and Q plus 8 eventually. Okay. So let's have a look at this. The usual problem, this thing has gone too big. I'll just reduce it. My apologies. Maybe that will. I'm trying to do these things too quickly, and of course that's... is that visible now? Yeah, good. Okay, so now if I animate the plot... So what you're seeing now is the red line is 3n cubed plus 8, the green line is 3n cubed. Okay. Now if we just run this... You see that the green line, as C gets bigger and bigger, we are climbing above the red line earlier and earlier, as you might expect. Okay. I thought that's a fairly simple demonstration, but the thing to say here is if you're just trying to prove that one function is bigger of something else, there's no point in worrying about the constants being best possible. So though this is an interesting demonstration of the observation there, if you find constants that work, that's the end of the story. Okay. There might be better constants. Who cares? Right? In terms of just proving big O, any constants that work are fine. Okay. So don't waste time trying to find what you think are better constants. It's irrelevant. Okay. Another example, log n is big O of n. Is that in any way a surprise? Log n grows no worse than n? I hope not. Okay. We saw yesterday an example of what we expect. In fact, log n we know grows way more slowly than n, okay, exponentially more slowly. But here we just say it's no worse than n. Okay. Well, let's prove this formally. Okay. There are various ways we could prove this, but I'll just do this in a very simple way. Okay. And we need a proof of our intuition here. Okay. So let's observe that log n is less than n if and only if, of course, n is less than 2 to the n. Okay. And that's for n bigger than 0. It doesn't make sense to take the log of 0. That's undefined. Okay. So already n0 is at least 1. Okay. So when you do this investigatory approach, these side conditions are essentially telling you what n0 is going to have to be. Okay, that was nice and refreshing. But let's not do it again. Okay, yeah? All right. We're going to use induction to prove this this side of it. Okay. And now, what matters here is the implication going from here to here. If we prove this, then the implication says, okay, if this is true, then this is true. It so happens that the other way around is also correct, but that's not relevant to this investigation, really. Okay. Okay. Well, the base case n equals 1 is obviously true. That just asserts that 1 is less than 2. Well, that's okay. What about the induction step? So we'll assume that the inequality we want to prove is true for n, and show it's true for n plus 1 in this case. All very familiar stuff, I hope. Okay. Well, let's observe that 2 to the n plus 1 is what? It's just 2 times 2 to the n. But by the induction hypothesis, 2 to the n is bigger than n. So we're entitled to conclude that this is bigger than 2n. Okay. So very, very nice and simple. So that's by the induction hypothesis. To complete the proof, we just need to show that 2n is bigger than n plus 1. But that's pretty straightforward. 2n is bigger than n plus, bigger than or equal to n plus 1, if and only if, of course, n is bigger than or equal to 1. Just subtract n from both sides. Okay. So what this is saying, you need to n0 to be at least 1. The only other condition was up here, which said n0 must be at least 1. So as long as we take n0 to be at least 1, our claim is satisfied. Yeah? And we have finished. Okay, so in our definition of big O, we take C to be 1 and then 0 to be 1. Okay. It's that simple. Okay. There's nothing very clever going on. Okay, let's take something that looks a bit more horrendous here. In fact, it's a wolf in sheep. Well, it's not even a wolf. It's really just masquerading as being difficult, but it's dead easy. We've already seen how to handle this, really. It's just a combination of the previous two things. Okay. So I'm claiming that that's 8n squared plus 10n log n plus 100n plus 10,000 is order n squared. Well, we have, first of all, that this expression that we're trying to deal with is no bigger than this because we've just seen that log n is no bigger than n. So we can replace it by n and we haven't made it smaller. If anything, it's become bigger. Okay. And that's for all n bigger than 0, of course. Our replacement of log n by n only makes sense. You know, this expression makes no sense when n equals 0 anyway. Okay. All right, so we have to deal with this expression here. Well, notice now that n is never bigger than n squared. Okay. If you want to prove that, actually, maybe you should prove that for yourselves. Okay, I think it's obvious, but, you know, it'd be nice if you proved it. Okay. So certainly 100n is no bigger than 100n squared. Now, 10,000 is no bigger than 10,000n squared, providing n is not 0, of course. Okay. Important. Okay. That's one way one could make an oversight. If n is 0, then, of course, this is not true. But as long as n is at least 1, then we're fine. Okay? So this is all n squared multiplied by some constant, so we can now just collect all the constants together, as we've done on this line, and add them up. So the whole thing is less than or equal to 10,118 n squared, and for n zero, we just have 1, okay, in this case. Of course, this seems like a huge constant, but that's okay. Big O notation doesn't say it's got to be a small constant. Just any constant will do. Okay? But just as a matter of observation, in fact, you could use any constant that's even, no matter how slightly bigger than 8, it will do. Okay? And the proof of that goes in the same way as the first thing we saw for 3 and q plus 8. Okay? But there's no point in doing that extra work. As long as the constants do the job, they do the job, end of story. Okay? So that's... key point. Okay. Well, number 5 is a bit of a joke. 2 to the 100 is big O of 1. Is that in any way a surprise to anybody? No. 2 to the 100, although it's a big number, it's just a constant. Okay. Any non-zero constant is big O of 1. Okay. What's the proof? Well, take n0 equals 0 and c equals 2 to the 100. Okay. for 2 to the 100, replace it by any non-zero constant, okay? Zero is not big O of 1. It is. My apologies. It's the other way around that it's not true, okay? Yeah. Take any constant, it's fine. Okay. Now, this is the reason why big O is so useful. We have these very nice properties that hold for big O notation. So we don't have to keep going back to the definitions. That's the point, okay? It's good to be able to use the definition from first principles because you have to do it at some stage to establish certain facts about particular functions. But these facts here that enable us to just combine big O expressions without having to worry about the details. Okay, so the first one says if F1 is big O of G1 and you multiply F1 by any non-zero constant, you haven't changed the growth rate. Pretty obviously, right? Challenge, prove this. Okay, it should take about 5 seconds, okay, if you're really slow. Okay. Second one says, if you have two functions, F1 and F2, F1 grows no worse than G1, F2 grows no worse than G2, then F1 plus F2 grows no worse than the sum of G1 and G2. Should be fairly obvious. Challenge, prove it. Maybe 10 seconds. Okay. The third one is the same, but for multiplication of functions. The fourth one is a kind of transitivity. It says, if F1 grows no worse than G1, and G1 grows no worse than G2, then obviously F1 grows no worse than G2. Okay? Again, challenge, prove it, a few seconds. Okay? Now, don't underestimate the fact that these are easy to prove with they're therefore not so useful. They're incredibly useful. They save a lot of tedium. In use of big O notation. Number 5 is the general version of what we've seen a couple of times. If F1 is a polynomial function of degree D, so the highest power of n that occurs in this expression is D, okay, then its growth rate is no worse than that of n to the d. Okay. So if we have a very complicated expression, which is a polynomial expression, we can get rid of all that mess with just one big O of n to the d. Very nice simplification device. Okay. Remember, we're just looking for growth rates here, so all the lower terms are basically just noise in the growth rate, and they're not affecting the growth rate. Okay. Proof of that, it's in the notes, but before you look at the proof in the notes, why don't you prove it for yourselves? Okay. You've already seen how to do it. The first example, 3nq plus 8, just generalize that to you know, you don't know the coefficients, but just follow the same proof. That's what's in the notes. Okay. Next one, it says that if you've got a positive constant A and a constant B which is at least 1, well, bigger than 1, sorry, okay, then n to the A is big O of B to the n. What that says is any power of n grows no more than an exponential in n, as long as, of course, b is at least 1, bigger than 1. If b is 1 or less than 1, then, of course, b to the n is always no more than 1. Okay, so this is obviously going to be false. Okay. And that's another point. When you read these things and there are conditions on them, you should ask yourself, why are the conditions there? You know, what's forcing them to be there? Why couldn't we get rid of them? Okay. In other words, when you read the notes, you must read them with intelligent questioning, not just say, well, I just, you know, remember what it says and that's it. Okay. That's not understanding. That's just becoming a camera, a photocopying machine. Okay. Not a very high aspiration. Okay. The seventh, my apologies, tells us that log of n to the a grows no worse than log n. Well, that's pretty obvious, really. Why? Let's just do this. Keep losing the pen. Look, there's another one in here. What is log of n to the a? Well, that's just a log n, okay? Well, a is a constant in this expression, so obviously it grows no worse than log n. Okay. How difficult is that? But very useful to remember, because in lots of expressions you get something like that, and you know you can therefore just replace it by big O of log n immediately. The last one is the only one that is not entirely trivial, actually. It says that now log to the a of n. I found the other pen. Now this is just shortened for log of n raised to the power a. Is that a familiar notation to everybody? Okay, good. Okay, that says that any power of a logarithm, okay, has growth rate which is bounded from above by any positive power of n. No matter how small b is, n to the b will outstrip any power of the logarithm. Okay. And that's really a very important fact. Okay. I won't prove this. Basically, you can use some simple calculus. Okay. We'll just take it as read. Okay. So those are your tools for using big O notation. They really are absolutely key. Let's just do a quick example using. I'm going to run out of time because of that late start, but I'll try and fit in as much as I can. Let's look at this expression here, okay, and prove that it is big O of n cubed. Well, our expression is equal to this. Why is this? Because by 8, okay, log to the fifth of n is bounded from above by order n. You could use order n to the half, order n to the third, or whatever, but order n is going to be enough for us. There's no need to complicate the expression, because we're heading for an n cubed expression, so this is going to be n squared n, that's n cubed, that's going to be fine. Okay. Yeah. It would have been true to put here order n to the fifth, but then we're going to face problems. Okay. I hope that's clear. Okay. So as long as you have here n or n to the half, anything one or less as a power, it's fine. So just use 1 as a power because it's simplest. Okay. No need to start being unnecessarily complicated, as I say. Now, that's equal to the next expression by 3. What we've done is combined an order n squared term with an order n term. It says if you multiply, if f is order g, f1 is order g1, f2 is order g2, then f1, f2 is order g1, g2. Okay. Now, obviously, 13 n squared is order n squared by one of the statements in the previous results. That's already order n, so that's order n squared times order n, that's order n cubed. End of story. We don't need to go back to the constants and all that stuff just immediately. Okay, so straight away by 3. And you see now the value of the equation version of this. I can just write equals, equals, equals. If I use the set notation, I'd have to keep breaking the line of reasoning to rewrite the whole thing. Okay. Now, we've just rearranged this. That's all I've done here. So there's no, you know, it's just by commutativity of addition. Okay. Now, this initial function here is, of course, a polynomial of degree 3. So we can replace it by a simplified version, order n cubed. And, of course, we still have the order n cubed term there to keep. Okay. Well, we've got an order n cubed function plus an order n cubed function. That's just order n cubed by 2. End of story. Okay. So we haven't had to resort to finding the constants, etc., etc. We just use the basic information we have in the previous theorem. Okay. Now, this does not give you license to not learn how to find the constants if forced to do so, because we do at times have to work from first principles. Okay. And you will have to learn how to do that. Okay. But a lot of the time, we can just use the theorem and these combinational equations to save a lot of work. Okay. Okay. Now, that's all very nice and good, but there is a question remaining. If I say, somebody in the middle there is no more than 2 meters tall, that's correct, presumably. Okay. Let's say it's correct. Okay. I choose somebody who's clearly no more than 2 meters tall. Okay. Yeah. It's also true if I said they're no more than 3 meters tall, or 100 meters tall, or 1,000,000 meters tall. They're all true statements. They're all upper bounds. Okay? But they contain diminishing information. Okay? So if we just make a big go statement, it may very well be true, but it may be a huge overestimate. Now, when we're trying to estimate runtimes, of course, we'd like to get the best possible estimate of the runtime, not overestimate it. Okay? So if we say, oh, well, it runs no worse than order n squared, let's say that's true. Okay, that's fine, it contains information, but if it so happens that the algorithm actually runs in time order log n, that's an incredible overestimate. Okay. So we'd like to have some language for saying, yeah, it's no worse than this, and by the way, it's also no better. Okay, so we haven't overestimated. Okay. And we're talking of growth rates here, so we can introduce now a corresponding notation that bounds growth rates from below. Okay. And this is the so-called big omega notation. Okay. It's exactly the same definition as big O, but the inequality is the other way around. Don't get this wrong in an exam. You're throwing away some easy marks, and people do. Don't know why. Okay. Big omega is a lower bound, so the inequality is this way. Okay. Big O is the other way around. Okay. Make sure you get the inequalities the right way around. Okay. But otherwise, it's exactly the same stuff as we said before. So this is to bound the growth rate from below rather than from above. So we're saying it grows no better than this. Okay? And then if you combine the two statements to say that f is big theta of g is simply to say that it grows no worse than g and no better than g. So our estimate is tight in terms of growth rates. Okay? There may be a gap in actual values, but in terms of growth rates, it's exact. And that, an observation worth bearing in mind, it's a very simple observation, it would take you about 1 second maximum, provided you've understood the definitions. F is big omega of G is the same as saying G is big O of F. Okay. Very simple statement, but worth knowing. Okay. Examples of big omega of G, well, I won't go through too many of these, but if I say F is 3n cubed, gn is n cubed, would you be at all surprised if I claim that f is big omega of g? Well, no. I mean, you know, they have exactly the same growth rate. Okay, and the proof is as trivial as before. Okay, n0 equals 0, c equals 1, then the inequality is obviously satisfied. But there's one important thing. I apologize. The notes have a slight error in them on page 10. Example 2.91, so if you would like to correct that. I meant to correct before printing them, and then, of course, I forgot. And I don't want to shred 200 copies of notes just for... It's a very obvious error in there, so... but anyway, we might as well bring it to your attention. Okay, so that's really quite trivial. What about if f of n is log n and g n is log n squared? If I claim F is big omega of G. Are you at all surprised? No. What's log n squared? It's 2 log n. Okay. So G is just a constant times F. Well, the formal proof, I won't go through the details. I shan't insult your intelligence by going through all those details. They are in the notes if you want to see them. But it's just, the only reason to put the details up is just to familiarize yourself with the first principles definition of big omega. Okay. Can I move on? Has everybody got this correction now? Or enough people? Yeah? Okay, thank you. I do apologize for that, but you know, these things happen. Okay, quick quiz here, just to see how far you are in absorbing these things intuitively, okay? And you know you've understood these things when you don't need to think back to the first order definitions just to sort these things out. And you can get it correct, okay? All right, so don't answer out. Just think to yourself what the answer is, okay? And then we'll reveal the answer. So is it true or false that square root of n cubed is big O of n squared? 5 seconds. Okay, you fixed your answer. Yeah, of course it is, right? Why? Because square root of n cubed is just n to the 3 over 2. What's 3 over 2 compared to n squared? Well, it's less than n squared. So n to the 3 over 2 is always less than n squared anyway. No need to even constant adjustment here. Yeah? Okay, nice and easy. All right, next one. This looks complicated, but it's actually, again, a bit of a joke. Is it true that 2 to the floor of log n, remember, log's a base 2 in this course. Actually, it doesn't matter what the base is, but take it as base 2. Is it true that 2 to the floor of log n is big O of n? Okay, 5 seconds. Fix your answer. You can't change it. Okay. Of course it is. Why? Well, look, 2 to the floor of log n is no bigger than 2 to the log n. The floor is just taking the integer part, yeah? Well, what's 2 to the log n by definition? It's n, right? So, yeah, of course. You know, they're actually essentially equal. Not quite, but essentially equal. Yeah. All right, next one. Is it true that 2 to the floor of log n is big omega of n? Now, we're saying, we've seen that it grows no worse than n. Does it grow any better than n, you know, in terms of growth rates? 5 seconds. Fixed your answer. Yeah, of course, right? Here's a formal proof, but really, if you think about it, floor of log n just shaves off a factor of less than 1 in the value of the function. So basically, 2 to the floor of log n is really pretty much like 2 to the log n in terms of growth rates. Yeah? And 2 to the log n is just exactly n. Okay. It's only going to affect it by a slight multiplicative constant in terms of value, not the growth rate. Okay. Okay, is it true that n log n is theta of n squared? Remember, that's both an upper bound and a lower bound. Okay, it says it grows no worse than n squared and no better than n squared. Do you believe that? I hope not. Okay. The upper bound is true, of course. The lower bound is nonsense. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to put the proof up. Prove it for yourselves. Okay. Now, I stress, if you've got those answers wrong, don't worry about it. It just says you need to develop your intuition a little bit better. You just need a bit more practice at it. That's all that is saying. Okay, so it's maybe a slightly unfair quiz, but it's actually a reasonable indication for yourself privately where you are. Now, further reading is as indicated here, and this is up on the web, so you don't need to write this down. It's also in the notes anyway. Okay, so I'm sorry it's been a bit of a rush. I sincerely hope this will not happen again, otherwise I shall have words to say to Malt. But thank you for your attention.
Bigger than n equals 1. So
well, if it means 1 of n is 1, it's always at most 1, so it's
you don't want to be true, you know.
Okay. No, I mean, we can use it like, it's always smaller than 2 of n.
Yeah, that's a particular example of that. Yeah. No, that's a very valuable thing to have because, b could be 2, it could be 3, it could be 3.5, it could be whatever. Yeah, as long as it's above 1, the thing applies. So it's actually a very big labor-saving device. That's the point. Yeah, sorry, because of the rush, I couldn't go into details. It's very annoying, but.